Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil.
Attention à Nicolas Pepe, encore lui, voilà, qui crée des choses. La pute. Encore il ouvre bien ce pied. Nicolas Pepe, Nicolas Pepe, Nicolas Pepe. Ça, ça va le rassurer.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunner Blog. James, despite the anxiousness, despite the frustration, despite the fact we haven't signed anybody yet on transfer deadline day, it is a goodly morning.
I think it has to be, doesn't it? I mean, not only did we win a match, but Manchester United and Liverpool lost matches in such enjoyable, spectacular fashion. That this must be a goodly morning.
Holy shit, it was mental. Yesterday was truly a mental day of football. Apart from Arsenal, we provided a bit of stability, a bit of normality, a bit of, you know, a sort of anchor of good sense and sensibility in this crazy Premier League 2020 that we're experiencing so far. But we are the steady rocks, just making everything normal while everything else around them is going crazy. It was just an extraordinary day.
A 2-1 win feels very normal, doesn't it, in context? Mm. What I like is that obviously, maybe we'll touch on it more later, obviously United were just completely taken apart, but
shit.
Unfortunately it was by Spurs,
which
sort of was a bit, you know, there's a degree of conflict in my feelings about that.
Yeah.
But then, of course, for them to be overshadowed within minutes, essentially, by what happened with Aston Villa and Liverpool made it a much more satisfying day all round.
Yeah, well, I wasn't watching that game because I just sort of assumed that Liverpool would win, and it was Sunday evening, so I was watching a movie and checking Twitter every so often. It was like, hang on, what? 4-1 to Aston Villa? What's happening here? What is going on? And then it was like, turned it on a bit later and I could see people going, we want eight, we want eight. It was like, holy shit, it's just bananas. I watched a bit of it on Match of the Day 2 last night. I watched the Liverpool game. I've never seen so many deflected goals.
Yeah, it's a bit like if you were playing Football Manager and that score came up, you'd be like, the code's broken here. Do you know what I mean?
It
doesn't feel like real life. It was absolutely a surreal day on all counts. But anyway, I wanted to quickly say I've got some interesting news about my house that will affect the podcast. So you'll be delighted to hear. I don't know if listeners are aware, I might have mentioned it before. I recently, like in the last couple of months, moved into the first property that me and my wife have bought together. And, you know, it comes at a long spell of like shifting around and living like vagrants slightly and saving money.
Mm.
And we're very, very happy here. Yesterday, I got a letter saying that next door, and when I say next door, 6 feet away, are applying for planning permission to demolish a four-story building and build another one.
Oh, my God.
So all I'm saying is, unless I can somehow, I mean, I'll probably be lying out there on the building site like an Extinction Rebellion protester trying to stop this happening. But the next 2 years of the podcast could just be incredibly noisy.
Oh, my God. This could only happen to you, you know.
Yeah, I know. I'm absolutely gutted about it. I will find, if there's any clever lawyers who can stop this building being built, for the sake of the sound quality of the podcast, you must intervene.
I would say the building next door is a listed building, James, because something very important must have happened there in the time that it's been.
If it didn't, I've got a few weeks to make something very important happen there.
Right, okay.
So yeah. Of course, this famous building where the owner was murdered by a neighbour in a fit of rage.
God, who knows? Look, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it and we'll see, you know, what we'll have to do to make it all happen. God.
Soundproof my house. We're going to have to soundproof my house, Andrew.
It's
funnel all the Patreon money into a soundproof cell.
Do you know what? Years ago, I have a studio, as you know, in Dublin City Centre, which is a really nice little studio in town on South William Street. It's cool, really great location. But the first location that I chose was the top floor of an office building, just the other side of St. Stephen's Green. Really nice place. And I signed up for a six-month lease on that and began to move into the studio somehow, and I don't quite know how this had passed me by in the time that I'd come to look at the building and everything else, but just across the road, they were demolishing a massive building, and they were reconstructing an office building. They dug a hole which was probably about 100 feet deep. So even with all the soundproofing in the world, all you could hear were these like heavy machineries going. So I got nothing done in that place and still had to pay 6 months' rent. So
I mean, imagine if you didn't rent it. Imagine if you owned it. Okay. But I mean, I'm looking into soundproofing my skull. You know, can I sort of put foam padding on the inside of my cranium or something like that? We will find a solution. Nevertheless, on to the football.
On to the football. Yes, we'll talk about this. I think we probably need to split this particular episode into two parts as we normally do, and we'll have questions. But many, many, many of the questions are surrounding what's going to happen today, transfer deadline day. Is anyone going to come in? Are we going to get rid of anyone? You know, what the shit is going to go on with with transfers between now and 11 p.m.? So I think we'll deal with all that in the second part of the show. And we can concentrate on the match yesterday against Sheffield United, which I realise many people out there are very unhappy about because we won a game of football. I thought some of the replies to your tweet yesterday were extraordinary. Like, I get the idea that people want new players and they're anxious for the squad to be improved. But why do you want new players? So your team can win more games of football, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how can you not be interested in the game of football and only interested in whether we sign players or not? I mean, I want us to sign a midfielder as much as anybody else, but ultimately, the game, the football, the club, I mean, isn't this what we're here for?
Demolition has begun.
There it is.
It seems. Mm. Yes, it is kind of extraordinary. I mean, I sort of hope and I kind of believe that what we see on social media isn't really reflective of, you know, the wider fan base. And I think we have to remember that. But I've never seen a summer like it in terms of people's investment and attitude towards transfers. And maybe it is because, you know, fans aren't in stadiums and fans aren't, you know, having that opportunity to connect with the team and they're looking for other avenues to do that. But I'm not convinced that the people expressing these views are all season ticket holders. So I'm not sure that necessarily stacks up. It is mind-blowing, really. You know, the point of the transfers is purely to win the games. So when we win the games, we've got to be pleased with that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we can all understand why there is a frustration and why there's an anxiousness and why we want the team to do more, because you can see that something is happening. You can see that something is beginning to bubble. And if we can add the right players, then we can be a better team and we can be more competitive and everything else. But, you know, to express complete disinterest in a game because we haven't signed those players yet, I just don't get it. I don't understand it. You know, you can have anxiety about not making signings but still be interested in the actual fucking game of football, you know?
Yeah.
So look,
if you're gonna say you're not interested in the game, at least say that at half time when the game was really, really boring.
It wasn't much of a first half, was it? You know,
what do we think about the team selection?
What do I think about team first selection?
Granit Xhaka left out unusual that he would not start a Premier League game under Arteta.
Yeah, look, obviously Ceballos was in the team, and I think he was there to provide some measure of incisiveness or creativity or whatever that might be. But Elneny's role was, like, I couldn't see Granit Xhaka play the role that Elneny played yesterday because a lot of the time he seemed to be operating as a kind of right back slash right sided centre half kind of guy, and Bellerin was tucking inside. So I wonder, was it to do with what he wanted from Bellerin which may turn out to be quite inspired considering the impact that he made, against the system that Sheffield United play?
I think that actually, in a funny way, it was kind of similar to the role Xhaka played on the left-hand side last season. We talked about that last week. I do think that as Arsenal move to something more like a back four, we're going to see a central midfield player sort of dropping in to build up with the back three. And you're absolutely right. From what I could see, that's what Elneny was doing. He was the kind of third right-sided centre-half in the build-up. And as well as allowing Bellerin to be very high, it also allowed Tierney to get higher on the left-hand side, because, you know, you had Gabriel there sort of covering for him on the opposite flank. So it was an interesting development, a role we've not really seen Elneny play. I mean, granted, our best spell in the game, I think, came when we kind of changed things and abandoned that, and Elneny was getting forward a lot more. But yeah, that was an interesting development. And I guess the other one, Lacazette left out for Nketiah. It's one of those where, you know, the Xhaka not playing, the Lacazette not playing, Rob Holding not playing. I don't know how much to read into it, because it was the third game in a week. And someone like Xhaka or Holding, they played a lot of football by that stage.
Yeah, I mean, I don't read a huge amount into it. Maybe the reliance on Xhaka in midfield is coming to an end slightly. We'll have to wait and see on that one. I suppose the one that stood out for me as well was the inclusion of Bukayo Saka, and particularly in the system that we were playing, which was... I know we have this fluid way of setting up at the back, but it was basically a back four. And that meant Saka in midfield, which may or may not be interesting when we come to discuss transfers and what have you, you know, in the second part. So that was part of it as well. And then Willian on the right, ahead of Nicolas Pepe again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look, I think the first half was uninspired from our point of view in terms of creativity. There was that early chance, wasn't there, for Nketiah? Lovely ball through from Lacazette, and that's the kind of chance he needs to be taking. Or from Aubameyang, sorry, yeah. And, you know, the miscontrol there was not great, and that's the kind of chance that he needs to be taking. And one of those that if it goes in very early on in the game, it changes the complexion and the way that the game might pan out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I watched the first half and I just thought this is two teams with a really strong emphasis on structure. You know, they were really kind of sort of in a solid shape, but nothing particularly creative or inspiring. And I think that was reflected in the amount of shots in the game. Very, very few, basically. And I mean, I was watching that thinking this is, you know, more of the kind of problems we've talked about with this Arsenal team, which is kind of not progressing the ball into the final third enough, not creating enough goal-scoring opportunities. And, you know, it needed to change. What was clear was as soon as the second half started, even though the shape didn't immediately change, I think there was a lot more impetus. And where I was sat, you could very clearly hear what Mikel Arteta was saying. And the two key words in the second half were quicker and higher. And I think that's what Arsenal did. But there were a couple of officiating things in the first half we should probably touch on too.
Well, look, there was a lot of focus, wasn't there, on the foul by David Luiz, or the incident with David Luiz very early on.
What did you think of that?
I think the idea of sending players off for that is absolutely absurd. And, you know, someone like Graeme Souness, who kicked and hacked and butchered his way around a football pitch, sitting there at halftime spouting on about how it should be a red card. You know, how do you tally that with the people who say, you know, all these handball decisions, they're killing our beautiful game? And how can you sit there and then talk about that tiny little shirt pull 50 yards from goal being a red card? I just don't get it. You know, they kept showing the one with the Aston Villa guy, Sheffield United game early on in the season. I mean, that's an equally ludicrous decision. That shouldn't have been a red card either. So let's not sort of use that as the barometer for what should and shouldn't be a red card. I thought the focus on it was really strange for me, no?
Yeah, and I think that we're entering this weird kind of period with VAR, where, you know, we look at all decisions and go, well, I mean, if they're giving red cards for that ludicrous thing, maybe they should give red cards for all the ludicrous things. And in the Luiz case, I mean, I had a couple of non-Arsenal fans texting me saying it would have been extremely harsh because, you know, obviously I was there at the game, so didn't see as many replays as you guys. And I think the goalkeeper, the key thing is the goalkeeper's comfortably going to get there. You know, it's not like the striker's racing onto the ball and it's got an open goal. I think basically the goal is just going to clear it away if the play continues. So, I mean, I was much more perturbed by the tackle on Aubameyang, which looked to me like a really, really ugly challenge.
It was. I mean, it was reckless. He was off the ground. He jumped in with both feet off the ground. And by the very definition of the word, it was reckless. He was not in control. He got the ball, but he followed through and clearly hurt Aubameyang. So I'm just, you know, it's one of those things where that kind of a challenge is rarely brought up and it's rarely discussed as something that is dangerous, because I think there's still this mindset in English football that, you know, it's a good, honest, you know, a tough tackle, and if you're at the end of it, you know, tough shit to you. For me, that's much more worthy of discussion than the Luiz incident, for me, you know.
Yeah, and I'm surprised that you can look at that and look at replays. And did they do a VAR check on it?
Well, I assume they did, but they didn't mention it in the commentary. Or maybe they did. I don't know. But like you have to assume that if VAR is looking at everything, right?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose what the issue there is that the referee gives a booking, and then the VAR has to decide if that's a clear and obvious error, and maybe they're loath to contradict the referee in that situation. I think that's a red card all day long.
Yeah, me too.
And funnily enough, if the referee doesn't give a card, I think VAR probably makes it a red. I was kind of flabbergasted at that. It was a really clumsy. I'm not saying the guy went out to, you know,
no, he didn't,
deliberately hurt the bloke, but it was a really, really clumsy.
Well, think about the Aubameyang one against Palace last year. You know, it's that kind of a thing where he was just a fraction late and he committed a bad foul. Because of that, he got the red card. VAR had a look at it and upgraded the yellow to a red. That's the way it worked. There was one for Nketiah as well, I think, wasn't there? A red card towards the end of the season.
At some point in one of the games.
Yeah, you know, so those kind of things. So, you know, this week we've seen the Mane incident on Tierney. For me, definitely a red card. And then yesterday. But look, let's not talk about officials and officiating. Because
what about Luke Shaw yesterday? Did you see that tackle?
Holy shit. Like, how is that not instantly a red card? Like,
I know.
It was the absolute classic in the genre of, if that had been Granit Xhaka, that would have been a red card. You know.
And Gary Neville, you know, who's, you know, got a soft spot for United on Sky commentary, called a red card the second it happened.
Yeah.
I was flabbergasted by that one too. Felt like they were almost letting United off because of, you know,
a bit of sympathy, which, you know, that's not the way it works, and that's not what the laws of the game are for. There's no law that you have to feel sorry for Manchester United because they're hilariously being beaten 6-1, and that guy is going, bloody hell, I can't believe we're losing, bloody hell. Anyway.
Do you think there's a United podcast where they come on and they do like an Irish accent, they do impressions of me and you moaning about Arsenal defeats and Squadra Mustafa?
I don't know. I don't think we're, you see, I don't think we're quite as public as, you know, they might do something on Arsenal Fan TV, because those are the clips that go viral.
We've cleverly avoided that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, maybe there is. Anyway, I'd rather not know about it if there is
a parallel universe. It's worth thinking about.
Yeah. So look, second half, quicker and higher. That's what Mikel Arteta wanted. I thought it was quite interesting to note that, you know, he made an early change. What was it, 55 minutes or something like
really
that?
Early,
when Pepe came on. So that was an admission that, you know, what he was looking for in the second half wasn't quite happening with Nketiah. So then we have this interesting thing going on where Aubameyang is moved to his central space.
Willian. What? What did you say?
Willian comes over to the left-hand side, or sort of between the left-hand side and the middle. Pepe is on the right-hand side. And I thought one of the things that I noticed anyway was that Bukayo Saka was on the ball a bit more and was looking to do things on the ball in the opposition half. And certainly we were playing higher, but we were playing with players who were looking to make things happen, because Pepe will do that. Willian will do that to an extent. I thought he was really average in the first half, half, but then so was everyone else. I thought he was better in the second half. I still don't think he was great, but I thought he was much better. I thought Saka was good. You know, the ability of Bellerin to get forward, we've seen it over the last couple of months. It can make a real difference that when we're looking for somebody who can drive with the ball, quite often he is that guy who gives us the option. I'm not saying he is the be-all and end-all in that respect, but we don't have too many players who are looking to break beyond the lines. And he was a number of times yesterday looking to overlap and looking for the ball and looking for the pass, and he combined well with Pepe, I think. So
yeah, I have to say, I watched Bellerin quite closely because in the first half he was right in front of me. And I watched Bellerin and thought that it was as good as I've seen him look for a long time. And there were flourishes in his game, really small things, technical things, ways he controlled the ball on the outside of his foot or shifted his weight one way then went another, his dribbling ability, which all caught my eye. And it was really interesting that after the game, Arteta spoke out and said, you know, he came to me and he said he really, you know, feels like he wants to stay here, and his efforts in training redoubled. I'm sure that more than anything emotional, fitness is a huge component here. And he must be getting back to somewhere like his best. But I was really impressed by his technical quality, and I found myself feeling very, very glad that PSG ultimately turned their attentions elsewhere in the summer. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right about how we improved. And at half-time, I tweeted, I think I was sort of trying to sound like Clive off Arsenal Vision, you know, a bit fancy and tactical, but I said that Arsenal need to improve their small space game. And I think that's absolutely right. They, you know, it was the classic Arsene Wenger thing, that Arsenal could play in small spaces, do all that kind of, I suppose, what we would call tippy-tappy, you know, edge of the box, one-twos. But that's what's required to break down a low block. That's what's required to break down a deep defence. And it's not something we conventionally do well in this Arteta team, I think.
No, that's true. And I think it is very pleasing to score the two goals the way we scored them against a team like this. I mean, I think, you know, you can bemoan the lack of creativity and in this Arsenal side. Absolutely you can. But you can also acknowledge that Sheffield United are very, very stubborn, difficult side to play against, very well organized. You know, the setup that they have worked extremely well for them last season. Yeah. They've had a bit of bad luck so far this season, but
they'll be better than they are now. Like, yeah, their league position is not a reflection of how good a side they are, I think.
You know, and I think what we have to look at in this result is it was a game that we drew last season at home. It was a game that we lost away from home. So, you know, we're looking for this team to make improvements, and I don't think it's fair or reasonable to expect massive improvements, but what we need to do, and I think we said this before, is turn some of the draws from last season into wins.
Absolutely.
Because you know, 3 points versus 1 point, you don't need me to tell you what difference that could make in the league table towards the end of the season. So if you're looking at this game as evidence of some progress, you can have some frustrations perhaps with the way that we played, and maybe we should have done a bit more. I get all that, but ultimately the result is an improvement on what we did against this team last season, and for me that is a positive. So
yeah, absolutely. And I think something that really struck me during the game, and that, you know, I actually wrote about this morning, is this idea that Arsenal do play that quite sort of delicate, you know, tippy-tappy, short-passing football, but they've been playing it in their own third. You know, that's where they play their prettiest stuff. And the reason they do that is because their best attacker, Aubameyang, is a guy who really flourishes in space. So you play a short-passing game in your own third, you draw the opponent onto you, and then you create the space in the final third for him to exploit. But sometimes you come up against a team, and this has been Arsenal's problem, who aren't going to be drawn onto you, who are incredibly well structured and sit in deep defensively. And that's when you need to play that kind of football higher up the pitch. And I thought Pepe and Saka, and to an extent Willian as well, actually, showed that they can do that. And if Arsenal are in those situations where they need to produce that sort of game, I think they, more than any other individuals in this team, are the ones that Arteta needs to look to.
Do you think it's a coincidence that when we brought on Pepe and we moved Aubameyang into the centre, You're okay with that? You've come to terms with that now. That's fine. I was just leaving.
Oh, right. Sorry. Yeah, sorry. What? Is that even allowed? My mind has exploded. Carry on.
Fine. You know, and we have Saka on the pitch. We have Willian on the pitch. We have Pepe on the pitch. And we are playing a bit higher up. This, you know, we sparked into life with those players on the pitch and in the positions in which they were in. Do you think that might have been in some way informative for Mikel Arteta?
I think so. And, you know, there is a degree to which, you know, we can talk about it from the tactical perspective, but there is also a simplicity here. You get good, creative, attacking players on the pitch and suddenly a bit of magic happens. And actually, look, we're going to talk about transfer window. We're going to talk about signings, of course. But I was watching that last half hour and I was looking at Ceballos, Willian, Pepe and Saka, all kind of playing behind Aubameyang, a master poacher. And I thought, there's a lot of talent there. There's a lot of talent on that pitch at that point. And I really think moving forward, particularly in home games, particularly in games where we're going to have more of the ball and dominate possession, there felt like a little bit of chemistry, I think, in that setup. And
yeah,
I'm optimistic we'll see more of it. I really think so. Was that your sense as well?
Yeah, I mean, look, this is not to sort of jump into what we're going to talk about after the break, but, you know, the idea that we're not going to sign maybe a creative midfield player is, you know, it's disappointing if we go through a transfer window and we don't do that. The reality of that, though, means that we are going to have to find a way to be more creative and to create more chances and to be more dangerous with the players that we've got. You know, as much as people don't want to hear that and maybe won't like it, and I understand that, we have to think of ways in which we can be more dangerous on the pitch. And I looked at that, and you're right, I forgot Ceballos in there as well. So you have Ceballos, Willian, Saka, Pepe and Aubameyang. That's, you know, it's not bad. It could be better, obviously, but it's not bad. You know, and I think it's not a coincidence that the goals came when we had those players on the pitch. I think Pepe really brought something to the party, not just with the second goal. He was involved in the first goal as well. And I thought it was really smart. You know, I think what we're seeing are these flashes of the kind of football that Mikel Arteta wants to play and the kind of team he wants us to be. And he did say over the weekend, you know, before this game, that he wants to, you know, have X amount of chances and he wants to dominate possession. He wants to score lots of goals, but he has to be, has to try and do it with the players that he has. I mean, it's another example of him saying, basically, we need better players to be able to play the way that I want. Nevertheless, you know, there are flashes in games and moments in games where I think some of the training ground stuff is obviously coming off. I thought it was really smart movement. It was a lovely goal, that first goal. You know, Elneny involved, Aubameyang, the sort of pass, a bit of an overlap, Bellerin's cross, Saka's header. You know, there's a lot to like about that goal.
Beautiful goal. Beautiful goal. And if you think about an archetypal Arteta goal, you know, this idea of Arteta ball, it is those sweeping moves one end to the other. So, you know, short, long, and then we go. And this was a different type of goal. This was a goal that felt, you know, almost Wenger-ish. It was that sort of interplay on the edge of the box, breaking an opponent down, skill, intelligence, guile, movement. I really, really liked it. And it's what Arsenal need to do more of this season if they are to turn some of these draws into wins. Yeah, good play from Pepe in the build-up. Willian was involved as well. Bellerin making a dangerous run. And isn't it? Am I right in thinking it's Elneny, actually, who drives into the box?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that was sort of one of the changes from the first half. He played in a more advanced position. But, you know, I remember, funnily enough, Matteo Guendouzi might well leave the club today, but one of the things that I liked about him was that ability to just sort of, you know, take a game and say, right, I'm going to push on and I'm going to make something happen here. That is never something I would associate with Mohamed Elneny. But he did seize the initiative in that moment, so fair play to him.
Yeah.
And a nice header too on the end from Saka.
Yeah, look, I think it was part of something a bit more structured than the sort of the woolly chaos that Guendouzi brought to the odd game. You know, I'm thinking of that Villa game where he was really, really good. So, yeah, look, a lovely goal. And the second goal, what I really liked about this was I was frustrated in the first half that when Willian got the ball on the right, he very often went backwards. I don't think his touch and his control was where it should have been on a couple of occasions. But
no,
you could see immediately what Pepe wanted to do was look for a forward pass. So he had the ball, he played it inside to, you know, there's Bellerin playing in this kind of old-fashioned inside right position. And, you know, the pass back to him, that burst of acceleration, the drive into the box, the finish, absolutely all the things that people were excited to see from Nicolas Pepe when we bought him. That is the kind of goal that we maybe haven't seen enough. I'm not saying it's something he could and should do every week, because it's obviously quite difficult. It was a really, really, really good goal, and I was delighted for him to get it, because I think he needs that kind of a confidence boost. He does feel like a confidence player. You could understand why confidence would be in short supply in the early stages of this season. So it was a fantastic goal to score, and to score quite soon after the first goal really kind of put the markers on Sheffield United.
Yeah, and I think he's had some great moments at Arsenal, Pepe. You know, he scored 2 free kicks to win us a game in the Europa League group stage last season. But I think this was my favourite Pepe moment thus far. And the reason is, it was what we bought him to do. Like, when we bought Pepe, I don't think any of us thought, well, we're buying a free kick specialist here, someone who'll deliver us really good dead balls. We thought, we're buying someone with pace and goal threat who can run in behind and who can finish. And we haven't seen that loads at Arsenal. You know, we've seen him scoring from cutbacks and things like that. But when he turned and took the ball and drove at the defence, stroked it home, you know, without being too simplistic about it, it was like watching Pepe at Lille. It was like watching all the YouTube videos that had us all salivating and excited about the signing that we were making. I loved it as a goal. I loved it as a moment. I thought you saw from him and his teammates that sort of little explosion of confidence and satisfaction. And Arteta's right. After the game, he said, look, consistency. Consistency is what I'm looking for from this player. But that was a real... He's been a player of moments thus far. That was, for me, one of his best moments. And I really, really hope he can push on from here, because he's had a slow start to the season. But, you know, while he is a player who can play in big space, who can play on the counter, he absolutely also has the skill and the technique and the imagination to do, you know, to break down defences too. And, I loved that goal.
I think it's a bit of a shame that our next three games are what they are, you know, in that we've got Man City, Leicester, and then Manchester United, whatever.
Well, it'll probably be back to kind of what we've been doing until now, won't it? I would
kind of, yeah. And you know, if we were playing so-called smaller teams, maybe there might be the opportunity or the ability to play with this kind of formation, or, you know, give Pepe a run of games. And I'm not saying he shouldn't, but I just feel like maybe he won't because of the opposition we're playing and the difficulty of that. I also really enjoyed the fact that after the second goal went in, we controlled the game for the most part in terms of possession. We just kept the ball, we kept it moving, we made them run around and chase the ball, and they didn't get near it for periods. There were times where we had the ball for 2-3 minutes at a time and they just couldn't get anywhere near it. And it's been a while since I felt comfortable or seen an Arsenal team even that's really comfortable in doing exactly what they did.
Yeah, I thought they were pretty assured, actually. And we ended the game with 65% possession, which is, you know, relatively unusual for us of late. How much of your kind of satisfaction with, I mean, I know we conceded a goal and we'll touch on that, but with the kind of security of this Arsenal team was down to Gabriel? Because I thought he had a really good game, actually.
Yeah, I did too. I think what's really noticeable about him is that in these one-on-one situations, he is really, really good. Really good. There are a couple, like, there are sort of duels where the guy is trying to go past him or where he's covering space and he'll win a tackle or he'll block the guy off and force him backwards. But there were a couple yesterday where it's one of those where the ball bounces and he's running back and he's the last defender and he's got to be decisive in what he does, right? He can't be half-hearted about the challenge. But he wins the challenges, and more often than not, he keeps the ball for us as well, even if it's with a header going in the right direction, going to somewhere, you know, to the feet of another Arsenal player. I think that, for me, is the most impressive part of his game. I think the passing will come. I think one of the things that I'm sure Mikel Arteta will talk to him and some of the other players about, especially when they rewatch the first half, is the pace of passing. The pace of pass needs to be quicker at times. We need to move the ball more quickly when it arrives at feet, but we also need to, like, just fucking fire it into feet. It's too slow at times. And that when you're playing a team like Sheffield United, where a half a second or a quarter of a second can be the difference between finding some space and not, you want your players to hit the ball as hard as they can when they're making passes. And I think that's something that will come from him. But what I liked as well was some of the passing that he made into midfield. He was cutting between the lines. He was trying to add some, you know, some progression to the passing when we had it at the back. Overall, look, it's early days. Of course, it still is really early days. But I've been impressed with him, and I thought, you know, in a four yesterday, alongside Luiz, who I didn't think had a particularly good game, I was impressed. Yeah,
yeah, and one of the really nice things about Gabriel I've noticed is that when you watch him closely, you watch him in the duels, you can kind of almost see strikers becoming a bit disheartened, and it's been a long time since I could say that really about an Arsenal centre half. I mean, Sheffield United brought on McBurney yesterday on 56 minutes, and I don't know if you remember last season, McBurney gave us loads of problems. I mean, we really struggled to deal with him. He's a significant aerial threat, and we just looked so much more comfortable with Gabriel back there. He has a real physical presence, and it's simple, isn't it? But, you know, you put a 6'3" guy in at centre half who doesn't mind a duel, and it makes you a much more secure outfit. I was really, really impressed with him in this game. I mean, Sheffield United got their goal. I don't have very many complaints about the goal. I mean, it's a great hit. Oh, do you?
Yeah, I kind of do. I feel like Tierney and Luiz are bad for the goal.
Oh, really? You'll have to tell me, because I've not seen it back loads. But I just thought, oh, well, that's a hell of a shot.
It is a great finish, but I think Tierney gets a little bit wrong-footed. He kind of thinks McGoldrick is going to go back on his right foot because he's right-footed. So he sort of takes a step the wrong way. And Luiz, he makes himself smaller. Now, I know probably there's an element of, like, I've got to keep my hands by my sides and I've got to make sure that I don't give away a penalty. I think there's something about that, but I do want to see a central defender try and block a shot more. But take nothing away from the finish. It was a really excellent finish. I don't think Leno had any chance.
Yeah, I'm watching it now, actually, and you make a good point about Tierney. He sort of doesn't... Yeah, he gets wrong-footed massively, and it means he's short. The point about the hands, very interesting. Gabriel and Luiz yesterday, both, several times, in the box, went to defend a situation, arms behind their back.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, I think there has been a tweak to the handball rule in the last week or so, and they've slightly changed the directive on how to manage it, so maybe that's unnecessary caution, but it definitely felt like a conversation had been had, you know, with staff or whatever, of we're not taking any chances with handballs here, and maybe that was a factor.
Yeah, maybe so, and it made the last few minutes a little more nervy than they should have been, considering the control that we had over the game. A one-goal lead is always a little bit precarious, isn't it? But I think overall, we were good value for that win. The goals that we scored and the way that we scored those goals, even if we didn't have a huge amount of chances or shots on goal, I think just the quality of the goals and the quality of the football that we played to score those goals made us deserving winners.
Yeah, I mean, look, there weren't very many shots in the game at all, as far as I recall. Look, I think it was about six shots each apiece in the match, which tells you this was a very tight, structured game. But we did manage to break them down. We did do enough. I think it's a really good result at the end of, you know, quite a draining week. Two games against Liverpool. I mean, look at the effect that had on them against Aston Villa. The fact that we came through, I think Arteta rotated the team well across the week. To win two of those games, I'm very content with that, you know, headed into the international break. And I think we've made a strong start on the field, for sure.
Yeah, look, this was a game we had to win as well. When you consider the fixtures that are upcoming, you know, a home game we had to win this one, and we did. So there's a bit of pressure that comes with that. And, we lost to Liverpool, obviously, in the league last Monday. You know, you don't want to rack up too many defeats too early in the season. I think if you were to ask people realistically what would have been a good return from the first four games, 9 out of 12, most people would have said that's a good return considering Liverpool, you know. And I think, you know, what happened against Villa is very funny, extremely funny, obviously. But I think it's a kind of a freak result.
Well, it's all down to Emi Martinez, isn't it? The brilliance of Emi Martinez, of course.
Yeah, and well, look, and also the presence of Adrian in the Liverpool goal, I don't think does them much good. Yeah.
I mean, there was a goal, I don't know if you saw the goals, but there was one where Jack Grealish went through on goal. I think it might have been the seventh, actually.
Yeah.
And his finish, he basically just ran up to Adrian and just sort of just poked it past him. But it was a finish that really said he knew how bad that goalkeeper was. It was so impudent and sort of, confident that, he is extraordinary. He played about 12 games for them last season. They somehow won the league. So maybe we'll be all right with old Renault Renison on the bench for us.
Yeah, who knows? Speaking of impudent finishes, Vivian Miedema's goal yesterday. Holy crap, that was well worth checking out. You can find it. I think I retweeted the thing. It's on the Arse blog Twitter timeline. So look, anything else from yesterday that we need to touch on? I know people were anxious for us to do a bit of Ole out on the Twitter, but I had a look this morning. I couldn't really find anything hilarious, not in the same way that Sarri out and all that was going.
I've got a few though. So should we do a couple?
Yeah, you do them. I don't have them. I've got none.
This is one United fan, Abhishek. I cried at Man United. I cried today watching the game. But what hurt more than that is Evra crying on Sky Sports. You idiots.
That was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. The look of absolute despair on the face of Patrice Evra was... It was like...
it was great television. That was worth my Sky subscription alone, I've got to say.
Yeah, I could feel my soul filling up again.
And then he goes on, actually. He doesn't end it there. Please leave us or kill us. Because you can leave United. We can't. We die with it. Hashtag Man U Tottenham. Hashtag MUFC. Hashtag Ole out. Hashtag Glazer out. Praying emojis. which is good. I like this one as well. Yash Kropkar. Stupid Ole in fans get a bitter taste of the truth. Thank you, Jose Mourinho, for exposing the fraud. The special one, hashtag Ole out. So I like that. They're so angry that they've turned back to Mourinho.
Oh, my goodness.
Cheesehead Brown Pants, which is actually this person's name. Tonight was so humiliated moment. Easily Man United conceded and everything turned to be nightmare. Inside three matches, we conceded 11 and scored 5 goals. Come on, just do the changes at all, or we going to go down into championship. Hashtag Ole out.
Oh my goodness, there's going to be some value from this, hopefully, as well, when we visit Old Trafford. That would be glorious. We'll
Please.
Dig up some Ole out. Hopefully Ole will still be in at that point and they haven't sort of done what they should be doing and like bring in a manager who's better than someone who failed at Cardiff City. But there you go. Okay, alright, we have got lots to talk about in part 2. What is that? Is that the Next Door's Garden?
Leaf blower? Yeah, Next Door's Gardener. I don't know what their game is. What are they doing, do you reckon? Blowing leaves? Sawing something down?
It seems to be going, closer and further away, so I don't know what's happening. Whether there's leaves.
It's autumn, isn't it? There's a lot of leaves. There's a lot of leaves that need blowing.
Just leave them. Just leave them there.
That's why they're called leaves.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. We're going to take a break. All the transfer madness and more in part 2. Right after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arseblog on the Arseblog Facebook page, facebook.com/TheArseblog, and also on the Arseblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you're an Arseblog member on Patreon, patreon.com/Arseblog. It feels like this is going to be a transfer heavy section.
Yeah, for sure.
Before we get into that, though, should we touch on the news about Gunnarsaurus? I know
that's the real transfer deadline news of the day. I
know people might laugh at this and think it's a really unimportant thing and what have you, but it's a bit weird, isn't it? I know there's no games. And that's what he does, is he's there, he's the mascot at the games, and he's, you know, great for the junior gunners and all that kind of stuff. But why is there some sort of need to make an official story out of his departure, if you like, or the fact that he's been sidelined? I mean, they do say, I think David Ornstein said at the end of his piece, that he will be back, I guess, when fans are back. But well, it looks a bit weird, doesn't it, this thing coming out? You can't keep your mascot.
The dinosaur will return. The man within it will not, is the situation.
Oh. You know,
So one man has performed the Gunnarsaurus role since its inception in the early 90s. And his name, I hope he won't mind me saying at this point, is Jerry Key. I'm not sure how you pronounce his surname, Q-U-Y. And he's a man who's got a history of working with the club in the junior gunners and in the travel club as well. And consequently, after the sort of COVID situation, it's a part-time role, and it involves him also doing some stewarding on the club coaches. The club have effectively let him go. The club say that this is about them looking at ways to be more efficient, and they will be bringing Gunnarsaurus back, and they'll be doing it in a more financially efficient way. But, of course, it's a shame to see anyone who's got such a long association with the club have to depart under any circumstances, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, look, I just don't think the optics of it are particularly great, are they? I mean, what are you saving?
I mean, that's a very fair question, yeah.
You know?
But I think that is the position the club are in, and I think that they... Well, from everything that I hear, I think the financial situation at the club is maybe a little bit more difficult than we even imagine.
Mm.
And if you needed evidence of that, perhaps this is it.
Well, that and obviously the fact that we haven't yet signed the midfielder that we so badly need, or that certainly would make a big difference to this Arsenal team. The links to Houssam Aouar were very strong. I know I said something on the podcast last week, which kind of got blown out of proportion a little bit, but there you go. Shit can happen in transfers. This, though, I stand by my information that this was a very doable deal from an Arsenal point of view. It wasn't about whether we could get the player. It was about whether we were going to buy the player or pay the money that Lyon wanted, right? So what do you think the fact that it broke down tells us? Is it that Arsenal don't have the money to do the deal, or they don't want to spend the amount of money that Lyon want to do the deal? Or is it somewhere in between?
I honestly think it's money. I really do. Because I don't believe that if you think Houssam Aouar is so good that he's worth paying 40 million for, that he's not necessarily worth paying 50, you know, given the degree of need in the Arsenal squad for a new midfield player. I think Arsenal had a limit that they could go to, and it wasn't sufficient. And I think that Arsenal, I think the real story of this window actually is basically Arsenal's inability to move players on.
Mm.
Which is not entirely their fault. There are a lot of factors in that. It's not a good market to sell a player at the moment, especially one on the wages Arsenal are paying people. So I think, yeah, I think obviously I'm disappointed like everyone else. I was really optimistic that we would get a new central midfield player, and I think I said that many times, but it doesn't feel, we're talking at 10:30 on transfer deadline day, it doesn't feel like we're going to get certainly any of our top targets, and in all likelihood, probably nothing at this point.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're not going to get your top targets, you know, do you go out and spend money for the sake of spending money? Like, I know we've been linked to Jorginho. That would be a hugely underwhelming signing for me. I would rather not sign anyone than sign a player who doesn't really give us anything that we don't already have. You know, not a significant improvement on anybody in the squad. And again, the wrong kind of age profile, the wrong message, I think, when you're trying to build something at a club, if you're taking guys that one of your rivals just don't want anymore or are willing to let go, I think there's something slightly insidious in that, in the kind of perception it creates around your transfer business. So I don't want Jorginho at all. I was looking for somebody who could bring a bit more creativity and everything else. But on that, we have a question from JB at Gunnar Punner, who says, say we completely understand that Awa and Partey were out of our reach. Are we supposed to believe, looking at this team, that there isn't a single 15 to 20 million pound midfielder in Europe who can improve this Arsenal midfield?
That's a really good question. And I don't believe that, maybe not 15 to 20, but certainly within Arsenal's budget, given what they're prepared to pay for Awa. You know, if you go up to 30, you open up big chunks of the French and Spanish market. And I think there probably are players who could improve Arsenal's options. I remember Mikel Arteta saying, you know, we will wait for the right player. We won't just go for the wrong player. I sort of feel in two minds about it, because I'm like, yeah, maybe there is someone who could improve us a bit, but is not kind of the lesson of this squad that there are sort of too many players that we've brought in that weren't really quite right or weren't actually the quality that we thought. So, you know, would we not end ourselves back in the same situation by sort of defaulting to number three or four on the list, you know?
Maybe, but I mean, what are we supposed to think about a club that can't identify talent in the way that other clubs can? Other clubs can find these players. You know, that's a reality that we're going to have to face up to. And look, if the restructuring of the scouting department is the way that it has to go, then fine. But, you know, prove that the decision that you're making there is the right decision by making improvements in terms of the players that we're linked with and identifying out there in the market. It's very difficult to imagine that in the entire European continent or wherever else you can go looking for players, that there aren't alternatives out there who would have been within our price range, who are the right age, you know, the right stage of development, who could come in and bring something to the team that is missing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You know, obviously the scouting department made their recommendations. They submitted literally a dossier of recommendations before the end of the... before they were all let go, sorry, is what I mean to say, that Arsenal were able to work off. But I do think, personally, that the destabilisation caused by different departures within the recruitment department at Arsenal has undoubtedly affected them, actually. And, you know, I refer to the scouting department, but I also refer to Rousseau. I think whatever your opinion on him, and I think our opinion on him on this podcast was pretty clear, to lose the guy who leads your negotiations in a transfer window puts a lot of burden on the guy who takes over his job. And arguably, you know, he struggled, I think, with that situation. If you look at the business that we've been able to do since then, it doesn't really speak to tremendous work from the people who inherited that role.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. I absolutely accept that. But, you know, I'm not sure that the blame for Raul Sanyehi's departure can be put anywhere else than Raul Sanyehi.
No, I'm not blaming anyone else for it.
No, I know what you mean, but it's this idea that we should have just let Raul stay in the job when there were reasons why, you know, that they wanted to part ways, you know? So...
Of course. And, you know, in some ways that's unavoidable. You know, like that, you know, that had to happen. But I don't think it...
I don't think it will help
Arsenal in the long term. I don't think it helped them in the immediate term, you know?
Mm.
I think that if you look at what we did, you know, after that, something like the Aubameyang contract, that had been set up, you know, principally by Raul. I mean, Thomas Partey, that was a negotiation that he was overseeing. When he comes out the club, you know, those things might be a bit more difficult. But, I mean, as it happens in the case of Partey, I think that's purely about money. I just don't think that we could get near the numbers, both in terms of the fee and the wages.
Mm.
And that opens up another question about money. I mean, I'm sure that people have asked us this, so let me have a look. But basically, well, if I can't find it, you know, what do you think about the money? So, for example, Brad Dennett says, if the money brought in through Emi's transfer isn't reinvested in the squad, should we feel cheated, or is this a reasonable business decision during a period of financial unrest?
I'm sure the money that we brought in from Emi Martinez was part of the money that we were offering to Leon for Aua. So I don't think it's a case that the money has just gone into the coffers. Maybe it will be handy now if we don't sign anyone to keep things ticking over. But I mean, we had questions from the Discord. This one from... let me see here. I've got to put my glasses on. That's ridiculous. I'm going to get my fucking eyes lasered. I hate wearing glasses.
Do it. Apparently, it's great.
Yeah.
I mean, not the actual bit where they're lasering it off.
See, that's my thing. I feel a bit squeaky about, like, having lasers shot in my eyes.
You can smell the flesh burning.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll think about it a bit.
Apparently. More. Obviously, I've got glasses on, so I've not had it done.
Yeah.
It must have gone very wrong if I had it done.
Stark on the Discord says, why do our owners never step up when it's needed? Kroenke just opened a multi-billion-dollar stadium and we can't come up with the money to buy two players. Shameful. And then O'Neill says, are you guys concerned by the total lack of communication from the Kroenkes recently? It seemed like Josh had taken up a more active, plugged-in role with the club, but a lot has happened over the summer with Raul's departure and various other restructurings. A little reassurance over the club's ambitions and intended trajectory from ownership would be nice. I know Mikael says there is cohesion and support there, but that doesn't seem to be manifesting into anything different than usual. It feels like they aren't going to back Arteta this summer. Whether they care about the club's position or status or just the value of investment, it seems now is the time to offer that added bit of support.
So, do I think the Kroenkes have the financial capacity to give Arsenal money, essentially, to go and buy players? Yes, of course they do. They are very, very wealthy people. Am I in any way surprised that they haven't? No. And I don't know about you, but my personal thing is, like, I almost can't get exercised about it because it's like expecting, you know, what's the
scorpion and the frog?
Or a scorpion and the frog. Exactly. KSE gone KSE. I don't think they'll ever do that. I don't think they might in different ways, but I can't see them ever funding a transfer splurge, for example.
Mm.
What do you think?
Yeah, like you, I'm kind of not surprised, but also it's a bit of a shame because, you know, there is an opportunity there. And we've said this before, that when you're a club that's owned by a billionaire, there is an opportunity to do something in the market which can make your team better. And ultimately, it could be viewed as an investment, a capital investment in the club, you know. If you do care about the sporting side of it and you do have ambitions that you say you do, you know, there is... very good reason why you could put your hand in your pocket, or you could finance or structure some kind of financial arrangement which would help you get the Aua deal over the line if you wanted to make it happen. you know? Yeah. So I think it is, at the same time, I understand and I'm not surprised, but I can't help but feel disappointed in some ways that they haven't backed Arteta the way that they do. And we did have some questions on this one. One second, if I can bring it up.
Yeah, you find that question. I just wanted to add something that I sort of meant to say. So while I do feel that Seigneur's departure is disruptive, I kind of feel that the story of this window, and I was chatting to Amy Lawrence about this morning, she was very interesting about it, but is that, you know, Arsenal are kind of, if Arsenal don't have any money now, while that is, you know, largely down to COVID, it is also a consequence of all the business that's been done before.
Yes.
And you know, Seigneur was responsible for that. Ivan Gazidis has been responsible for some of it too. You know, Arsenal basically have overloaded themselves with players on very healthy salaries that they're not able to sell. And irrespective of COVID, I think that is something that deserves focus.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you can't help, or I certainly can't help, but look at the deals for Pablo Mari and Cedric Suarez as ones which have hampered our ability to do business this summer.
Mm-hmm. Well, right? we signed them basically this summer. So
yeah, we signed them.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. No. But they were done in January, and Pablo Mari turns out to be maybe a bit more expensive than the initial reports have said.
Mm. A bit more permanent than the official reports suggested. You know, it was kind of always going to be made permanent from what I can
yeah.
see.
So, you know, how can you not have a question about, and this again, just to be clear, we haven't seen enough of Pablo Mari to say one way or the other if he's going to be a good player or a success at Arsenal.
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. However, you can look at a player's career trajectory. You can look at a player's, you know, his where he's played his football and everything else, and have some questions about that when you join a club like Arsenal. You're brought in as a left-footed central defender. And within, what, 4 or 5 weeks of making that deal permanent, we buy another left-footed defender for twice the price.
Mm.
That raises questions for me.
Mm.
Cedric never needed him. Absolutely never needed him. I know you wrote a piece in The Athletic which explained why they justified it.
Why they did it, yeah.
Why they did it, which was they thought Maitland-Niles was going to leave, and obviously Hector was coming back from his injury, so he needed some backup. But, you know, he will never be anything more than a backup player at Arsenal. He's 29 years of age, and we've given him a 4-year contract. He is one of the players who, like the ones that we've got going on at the moment, is going to be really, really difficult to shift. So we've just sort of repeated the mistake that we've made. So we paid a loan fee for him. We paid wages for him as well. So that's a fairly substantial outlay on two players who have massive question marks over them now. So, you know, you look at what we've done in the market in the last little while. I know we spoke about this the other day, and, you know, fingers crossed, the £28 million that we spent on William Saliba will turn out to be a great investment, and he will be an excellent player for Arsenal. But if you're a club like Arsenal, and I know nobody could see COVID coming, but if you're a club like Arsenal, can you really spend £28, £30 million on a player who isn't going to play for you for 2 years?
Mm.
You can't.
Well, no, right now that doesn't feel sensible, does it, at all?
No, and I know there's an element of hindsight and everything else, but
yeah, and, you know, yeah, I mean, the landscape has dramatically shifted, obviously, and that places everything in a different perspective. But I agree with you, those January transfers right now don't look like a sensible use of resource. As for KSE, I completely understand fans being frustrated with KSE, and I think that actually that is a perfect place to sort of target your frustration. I can only speak for myself and say that today I just feel a bit kind of exhausted by being angry with them. Do you know what I mean? I just feel a bit like they are what they are, and it feels very, very difficult to change that.
Mm.
I mean, what about this question on the Patreon from Crujo, who says, if we don't sign our or party, is this a bad window?
Look, I think if we don't sign a midfield player, it cannot be construed as a successful window because we know we've needed one. If we're losing Guendouzi, which seems to be the case, if we're losing Lucas Torreira, which seems to be the case, if Mikel Arteta has no use for Mesut Ozil, which seems to be the case, and we don't add anybody beyond a player we already had in Mohamed Elneny, how can you call that a successful window, particularly when I think everybody could see that midfield was the one area where we really, really needed to add something different to the team. And every time I've heard Mikel Arteta talk about how we have to improve the quality, we have to improve, you know, he can do what he can to get the best out of the players, etc., etc. But, you know, more than once he's made it clear that investing in the team is the only way to bridge the gap to the teams like Liverpool and like Man City and the top four and ultimately be a team that can compete for the championship. Premier League, rather. You know, if you haven't done anything significant to make that happen, how can you say it's a successful window?
Yeah. So I don't think it's a good window. I don't think I would call it a bad one, because I do think that the signing of Gabriel and the contract extension of Aubameyang, and to an extent Saka, if you include that, is incredibly positive. And I don't want that to be forgotten amidst the frustration of today, you know?
Sure. But, I mean, I can completely understand why there is such a measure of frustration out there. Not just because we didn't get Auer, but because we didn't get anyone. And I don't mean anyone, like we should just go and spend money for the sake of spending money. I think, you know, when we talk about the squad, we realize that the reason we should spend money is to improve it, not just to keep people happy because they're frustrated that we haven't signed any players. But, you know, the idea, going back to what we were talking about earlier on, that, you know, if it's not our, surely there's somebody else. Surely there are other players out there who could come in and do a job. And I think one of the things to remember is that there is a secondary window in which we can buy players from EFL clubs. And we've targeted players from, you know, Brentford this summer. You know, there are players playing at that level who could come in and, you know, do a job for Arsenal. And maybe they're not going to be the world-class player that, you know, we would like, but certainly somebody who could come in. But let me just sort of throw this out there, and it sounds a bit of a Hail Mary, and maybe it's just trying too hard to see the positives on something, but we have a question, we have a couple of questions. One from LemmyG81 on Twitter, who says, does dropping Saka into a midfield three negate the need to sign an Auer-type player, or am I being ridiculously optimistic and making allowances for a very likely shambolic end to our transfer window? And also, here's one from Ollie Tucker, who says, as it stands, it's unlikely there are going to be any incomings. If that's the case, what do you think the knock-on effect for somebody like Emile Smith-Rowe might be?
Well, I was literally going to say, as soon as you said, you know, the frustration of if it's not our, who is it? And maybe this is, you know, glass half full, but maybe it is Bukayo Saka. Maybe it is.
Like, if Saka was a player playing somewhere else and Arsenal went out and spent a load of money on him, would we be excited as fans to add him to that squad?
I mean, now, granted, he's not an addition, really, because he, you know, he was here last season. Yeah. But Auer is a left-sided central midfield player. He's right-footed, but he plays on the left-hand side. He's a left eight. He began his first few appearances in the Lyon team because this idiot, me, spent weeks fucking researching him, thinking he was going to sign. I have to write a huge athletic piece about him. I know, I can tell you who his school teacher was, I can tell you his nickname, I can tell you the job he wanted to do when he grew up, and never see the light of day. But anyway, he played his first few games in the first team as a winger. He played left wing and right wing, and he settled as a left-sided central midfielder. That's where Bukayo Saka plays. And ours, what, 20, I don't know how old he is actually, probably 22. Saka's 19. you know, there is a case. I mean, I'm sure they would have been brilliant playing together, but there is a case that having not signed out, we do have this player with massive potential who it seems to me is tailor-made for a role in central midfield. I mean, funnily enough, we spend years thinking like, you know, how are we going to replace Mesut Ozil? Who can do that job? I think he's such a different player, but in terms of what he can bring to the side, the creativity, I think Saka is the best bet. And if this means his development gets accelerated a bit, he gets a bit more playing time, he gets more seniority and a more important role in the team.
Mm.
I can be excited about that, actually. I really can. You know, if it's the case that he never plays and it's Xhaka and Elneny and, you know, we don't play attractive football and it's just, you know, Willian jogging around, yeah, I'll be frustrated. I'll find that difficult and I'll complain about it on this podcast. But if this creates a window for Saka, and I do think Saka maybe, you know, I know Smith Rowe is mentioned in the question, maybe more than any other young player in the squad. I don't know. I can pin some hope on that. Can you?
Yeah, because I think we have to.
Well, we have to, yeah.
I think we have to. And look, I think we shouldn't forget how good Bukayo Saka was last season in his first full season as a senior player. You know, at 18 years of age, he ended the season as our most creative outlet. He made more assists than anybody else. Mm. He's now 19. He's been called up to the England squad. He is making progress as a player. He scored his first Emirates goal yesterday. I think he was involved in some good stuff. And if part of what we have to do to make this team better is to develop somebody who actually has, you know, a high ceiling, if you like, and also plenty of room to improve as a player, then that's surely something we can get behind in the absence of transfers. Like, I'm not saying everybody should go, oh, well, it's okay, we didn't sign anyone, but at least we've got Bukayo Saka. I'm saying that Saka could be the silver lining to a lack of transfer business if nothing happens between now and 11 o'clock. Like, I think there's only so much you're going to get from Mohamed Elneny. There's only so much you're going to get from Granit Xhaka. But Bukayo Saka is at the start of his career, is really talented, seems like a really humble, hardworking young man who's got it all in front of him. And if what we do this season is get better by his improvement, then let's hope that that's the case.
Yeah, and funnily enough, you know, we're all talking about Awan and Thomas Partey's not really getting a mention. But I mean, based on what happened in the game yesterday and the contribution that Saka, Willian, Pepe were able to make, I look at the sort of deeper half of our midfield and see only Xhaka, Ceballos, and Elneny as senior options there, and wonder if it's that one that might hurt us more, you know, in the next few months. I just feel like in terms of, you know, Smith Rowe, Saka, arguably Willock, you know, we do have young players who can really contribute in that final third area. I mean, who knows what will happen with Reece Nelson. But when you look deeper than that, you know, that's where I worry about limitations maybe even a little bit more. Like, I think there's every chance Saka, you know, in the next 12 months, you know, explodes and becomes as good as our, and becomes, you know, this £50 million player that we need in central attacking midfield. But I, you know, I think the limitations of the likes of Elneny or Xhaka, you know, not that they're useless, but the limitations we're well aware of. And I do wonder if that's something we might inevitably focus on more. But your point about the window still being open, I think, is an interesting one. You know, there are players flourishing in the Premier League now who came through the Championship. I mean,
look at what Leeds are doing.
Exactly. That's a great example. I mean, and look at bloody Ollie Watkins scoring a hat-trick against Liverpool. I mean, I know it's a strange game, but there are others. I mean, the guy Benrahma at Brentford, everybody knows and can see, is a Premier League-level talent, a creative player who can play off the front. I mean, who knows? I honestly don't know anything about Arsenal being interested in him, but it's not impossible. I'm sure there'll be a bit of a scramble for him. But you're right, you know, there are more. I'm trying to think now. James Justin at Leicester, he came out of the Championship. Tyrone Mings at Aston Villa. The entire Leeds team. Arsenal shouldn't be above looking at that.
No, we shouldn't. And maybe it's, you know, what we need to do need to do a bit more of.
So 30 million for David Raya, it is. We funnel the our money into the pursuit of David Raya, finally get our man.
Exactly. Well, he just signed a new deal at Brentford, so I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon. But, you know, there is talent in the Championship, particularly if you get it at the right age. You know, a player who's ready to make a step forward. Edu spoke very clearly about wanting to use stat DNA as a way of you know, finding our targets and identifying players who can come in and do a job in the positions that we need them to. But yeah, look at that Leeds team, and look at they don't look in any way out of place in the Premier League. You know, obviously the coaching and the job that Bielsa is doing there is a big part of that, and you know they're on board with it, but. You know, it's sort of wrong to think that the only place you can get players from are other European clubs or top division clubs. So,
yeah. By the way, on the subject of this window, like, I feel a bit like Edu is sort of Teflon man at the moment. I feel like he is a slightly fortunate fellow because he came into the club quite a while ago now. But I feel like various things have meant that it's sort of been impossible to cast any real judgment on him and his tenure. And I even think in this window, when Raul went and he kind of took the helm, I still think there are enough mitigating factors, you know, Seigneur's departure, the coronavirus pandemic, the economic implications, to sort of say, to make excuses for Edu and sort of say, well, you know, it's difficult. But sooner or later, that time will come to an end. And I have a nagging doubt, let's say, about whether or not Arsenal have the right man in that role. And I'm not saying that definitively because there are genuinely mitigating circumstances, but it's just how long can it be before we stop making those excuses, you know?
Yeah, I think the jury is very, very, very far out. Very far out on Edu. I mean, the one thing I would say in some kind of mitigation is I'm not sure the sort of high-level negotiation over players is his skill set. So is he being asked to do a job that he's not capable of or not good at, you know? So that's not to make any excuses for him, because ultimately when you're in that role, you have a responsibility to deliver. And if we go through this transfer window without bringing in that midfielder, it's hard to say he's done that job well. So, yeah. Let me ask you this. I couldn't find the question that I wanted to find.
So you've made one up?
No, I haven't made one up. I've just got one that's sort of in the same kind of a ballpark.
Right, okay.
Right, it comes from Balu Gopalan, who's at Balu Gopalan on Twitter. He says, is Arteta becoming Wenger 2.0 after demanding so much from the board after an FA Cup win regarding transfers, now backing off and supporting the owners, saying they're doing what they can? And, you know, that has been his message throughout. So it's sort of the idea of what Arteta says he wants and what the board are delivering to him are quite different, but he's not sort of kicking up about it, if you like, or he's not being critical, which I think we can all understand why, but just your sort of general thoughts on what he's had to say.
Really good question. I mean, I suppose a man not criticising his employer should never be entirely surprising, right?
Yeah, we're all lucky. Exactly.
Anyone who's got a job at the moment is happy to have that job and not in a hurry to piss off the people giving it to them.
Yeah.
I'm sure we can all identify with that. I think that... So, in the case of Wenger, I felt he really did kind of shield the board and the owners, really it's the owners, from criticism, and I think it'll be interesting to hear about that in his book. But in the case of Arteta, I'm allowing myself to think that this guy is so demanding of the people around him that I just don't think he would stand for any shit. I just don't, actually. I think his stock is already high enough that he kind of doesn't need to necessarily. And maybe that's misguided. But at the moment, I have that kind of real fan feeling of trusting him and trusting that he's in charge. And if he says, you know, we tried, I'm inclined to believe.
Sure. I don't think there's a lack of trying per se. I don't know that that's kind of the issue.
Whether he thinks there's competency, that's another question, you know?
Mm.
And that's not something he can talk about publicly. But I've always said Arteta will choose. At this point, as manager, Edu works for Arteta.
Yeah.
And if Arteta feels he's not getting the job done, Arteta will have a guy in mind. It feels like those two have got a decent relationship, and certainly Edu is sort of positioning himself close to Arteta. But, you know,
it's
a smart move, because Arteta has the run of the club. And I think if he said, we need more executive support here, we need, you know, people who can get this stuff done, I think he'd probably get it. I mean, what do you feel about what Arteta said about, you know, the ownership and the support and the backing he's received? Do you think he has been backed? Kinda is my answer. He kinda has.
Kinda,
but
like,
not
I know
as
that,
wholeheartedly as I would like.
Yeah, exactly. I think there are obviously some inherited issues, you know, with certain players and wage packets, and, you know, players' contract management has not been great. You know, he's been parachuted in at a time when some players have, you know, only a little while left on their contracts and everything else. What did he say? He said, believe me, that the ownership, the board, Edu and myself are doing everything we can to maximize the resources we have to improve the team and sustain and keep the players that are in the club to make this club successful. I have 100% backing from them, and it's not just words. This is reality. Whoever knows me, if it wasn't like that, I would not say that. I say it because I feel it, and it's true. Whatever we can do, whether it is ourselves or the owners, they are willing to do it to support us, to back us, because I feel they believe in what we are trying to do. I don't think he would say that if he didn't believe that.
I don't either. It's not just like, oh, the board's about what we're trying to do. He's pretty explicit,
yeah,
right?
But I think there's obviously a knowledge gap here in that we don't know what they're trying to do. From the outside, it doesn't look like they're trying to do enough, or that the support that Arteta needs to get the player that he wants is there. That's what it looks like. Now, maybe there are reasons. Maybe there's a lot going on in the background that we don't know. But, you know, ultimately the Auer deal came down to money. Are we going to pay the money? We weren't, or couldn't. I don't quite know where the truth lies there.
I mean, here's the thing. I am really sure, I would say, that the people running Arsenal, the chief executive, Vinay, probably Edu, I'm sure they have done everything they can to get the players Arteta wanted. For me, the responsibility ultimately has to come from higher, right? If someone wants to inject a load of cash, Vinay can't put his hand in his pocket and say, here you go, Mikel, there's 50 million quid.
Yeah.
There's one person who could do that. His name's Stan Kroenke, right? So that is where the buck stops for me. I'm sure the people working at Arsenal, who are employed at Arsenal by KSE, have done their best, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And then we come back to the ownership and, you know...
Yeah, or the question of whether the people's best is good enough, which is another valid question.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
But, you know, it's we're in this position where we are run in this, inverted commas, self-sustaining manner, and there's been no real diversion from that, you know, in the current situation.
So what do you expect to happen between now and 11 o'clock tonight?
Well, people might be listening to this on Tuesday morning. I don't know. No one has commutes anymore, do they? So they're
probably just listening
to it at home. On Monday, I don't expect a great deal. I don't expect many incomings. I don't expect any incomings, to be honest with you. On Sunday, I thought potentially there might be one. But at this stage, it would take something to change. And I think today's going to be generally less busy than people anticipated. There's a sort of trend in this window of people waiting late and waiting for it to sort of whir into action. And speaking to agents, it just hasn't really done that.
Well, I mean, you say that, but I just saw a thing there on Twitter that Premier League clubs have spent over £1 billion in this transfer period.
It's not bad, is it?
You know, in a COVID market, et cetera, et cetera.
No, of course. And people have done business, you know, look at Everton, look at Sheffield United, look at, you know, other clubs. But what I'm saying is that there were some clubs waiting for dominoes to fall or thinking that, you know, they could leave it late and some of those clubs are going to end up short. I mean, Manchester United are going to do some business today, but probably not as much business as they wanted. You know, Arsenal aren't going to get what they wanted. And I do think that, you know, we mentioned this right at the top of the transfer discussion. But what we will see today is a couple of players probably leaving on loan. And I think that is absolutely central to the story of what's happened. That you know, very clearly there were players Arsenal were desperate to sell. Maybe too desperate, because there just haven't been buyers.
Well, that's it. I mean, Guendouzi joining Hertha Berlin.
Yeah.
You know, that was a club that he turned down earlier in the summer, apparently. Whether he was waiting for a more storied club to come in.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Or whether Arsenal were expecting someone to come in and offer us some money for Guendouzi. You know, I'm kind of surprised that if we were willing to sell him, there isn't a Premier League club out there who might spend some money on Guendouzi when you look at some of the money that Premier League clubs have spent. You know, yeah, it is a bit of a strange one. I mean, what do we read into the reports about Guendouzi that there's no loan fee? I see some people reporting that and other people reporting that there is a loan fee. It would be very surprising to me if we were to let a player like Guendouzi go to a club like Hertha Berlin, which has got some money. Because they were looking to bring in Granit Xhaka, if you remember, back in January.
Yeah.
It would be very surprising if there wasn't some kind of a loan fee being paid.
Yeah, I don't know the truth of that. And obviously, I'll try and find out. But it would be a little bit surprising. I mean, in the case of Guendouzi, I think it's pretty clear Arteta wanted him out. And maybe that hurt our attempts to sell him. You know, everybody knew he was on the outside. There were those sort of lip service comments paid, weren't there, at the start of the season? But I think that was pretty transparent. And I have to say, though, I'm a little bit amused that he sort of ended up with Hertha Berlin. I know they've got an interesting project there, blah, blah, blah. But there was talk of him hoping for Barcelona or something, you know? And it's not quite that, is it?
No, I mean, I don't think that was ever realistic, to be honest. And I think it's true when somebody is very, very obviously unwanted, it does have an impact on their value in the transfer market. I don't think it should quite have affected it this much. But then maybe the fact that there are no offers, substantial offers for Guendouzi from anywhere, maybe that's something that tells us a story as well. I don't know.
At least there appears to be someone to take him and take over his salary. You know, someone like, I don't know, Sokratis or Kolasinac, maybe even Mustafi. You know, those are all players Arsenal would have been happy to see go. And as things stand, I mean, I think there might be movement on a couple of those today, but as it stands, it hasn't happened. And yeah, I mean, I always come back to the fact that you look at the FA Cup final, there were two players left out of the squad that day, and that was a clear message from the manager of, I want these players gone.
Mm.
And if one of them had been sold for a decent fee and one of them, they'd even moved him on and removed his contract from the wage bill, it would have opened up, you know, a bit of capacity in terms of spending. And ultimately it didn't happen for Arsenal. And next, I mean, without wishing to kind of make anyone have to wait for a long time, you look at the contracts that expire next summer at Arsenal, Mustafi, Sokratis, Ozil, there might be a couple more, I forget.
Mm.
You open up a big chunk there, potentially.
Well, I mean, that's over £500,000 a week off the wage bill when those three guys leave when their contracts expire.
I mean, that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, yeah.
That's a game-changing amount of money. And, you know, I'm not saying I think Arsenal are going to go spend a load of money next summer, but I sort of think, had they been able to make that change this summer, we might be having a very different, maybe slightly more exciting day.
Yeah, that, and you know, not spending money on players we didn't really need, or players who perhaps aren't going to be good enough.
The sins of the past, I think, are haunting us a bit today.
Yes, I think so. Right, do we have anything else
No, not really. I mean, some people ask questions about the actual game, but
we covered the game.
Who gives a shit about that?
Yeah. Fucking football.
No, I don't think there's anything else, really. I'm just disappointed for everyone. You know, we all, you know, everyone loves a new signing. It would have been very exciting to have a big, you know, big star arriving. I think it was a real opportunity for Arsenal because he's a player who I think would normally... I wrote about him in April when I was looking at potential midfielders Arsenal could sign, and I wrote that Arsenal, in my estimation, couldn't get him, you know, because he was like destined for a Man City or a Juventus or a Barcelona or wherever. So when you get a clear run at a player like that, you know, it's frustrating that you can't go all the way.
This was our chance. This was our chance.
Oh, yeah. We're not getting that player, I don't think, down the line. Once PSG are back on the market and Juve and others, I'd be very, very, very surprised. And I think, who knows, but I'd be surprised.
All right. Well, look, we had a question from the Patreon, from the Discord. Chris says, how would you rate the transfer window out of 10, assuming no significant change in what seems to be happening today, which is not very much, and maybe a bit of deadwood removed? What we are going to do is discuss that on a Patreon pod tomorrow morning. So we'll just go over whatever the hell happens between now and 11 o'clock, and we'll make our quick assessments on the transfer window as a whole and where the squad is and where it stands and what we might be capable of doing with the players that we have. We will know the makeup of the squad between now and January. I suppose it's worth pointing out that there will be another transfer window in January, which is less than 3 months away now. So potentially there's more no business to do then.
One suspects that much will depend on, you know, do Arsenal get any fans back in the stadium and things like that. I do think, you know, the next few months could go one of two ways, really, and who knows what it will mean for sort of the...
Well, yeah, I mean, the other thing as well is that if between now and the opening of the new transfer window, the problems that we have in midfield, which we may have to solve with the players that we have, but if those problems remain and they are an impediment to us making the kind of progress that we need to make, then there's going to be even more pressure on those on high to get something done to make us better.
Mario Götze are on a free transfer. Mario Götze is available on a free transfer. It feels like classic Arsenal to roll back the years. Loan bid for Draxler at 10 o'clock tonight.
Bound to happen. We'll cover it all on the live blog.
Where's Kim Shellstrop?
Somewhere out there with his broken back. There must be a player out there who's paralyzed that we could sign. Anyway, thanks everybody for joining us. Thanks for being here as always. Let's keep fingers crossed. It seems very, very unlikely that anything's happening. But if you're listening to this on Monday, maybe something might happen between now and 11. We will cover it on the live blog over on Arseblog News, or you can just go to arseblog.live/liveblog for a good mobile view. Keep up to date on that. We'll discuss it a bit more tomorrow on the Patreon pod. So until then, keep everything crossed, keep the faith, and we'll catch you then.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.